Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. A statewide youth soccer organization has announced its desire to build a major sports and recreational complex in Canby, which supporters say would be a boon to local businesses and economic growth. A representative of the nonprofit Oregon Youth Soccer Association told the Canby City Council Wednesday that the proposed complex would also serve as the home of its many tournaments and other operations. The OYSA Foundation, O-Y-S-A, which has community leaders in Canby on its board, has been empowered to seek out a new and permanent space for OYSA's ecosystem to call home, said Patrick Sampson, founder and CEO of Cogeo, a consultancy firm hired by OYSA to guide them through the development process. The foundation has identified the Canby community as an ideal geographical location and civic partner. While Sampson's brief appearance before the council last week was light on specifics, he said the complex would include multiple sports fields that serve Canby and surrounding cities, statewide participants, and regional and national youth sports traveling teams. The complex would also feature an amphitheater for entertainment and community events and walking trails around and throughout the facility. The OYSA Foundation would lead the campaign to build and manage the facility, he added, while also partnering with other sports groups to meet their operational needs in the area. The foundation fronted the expenses for Cogeo's involvement in the project and is taking the lead on fundraising for its construction. It is also committed to managing the facility after it is built in partnership with the city in whichever fashion it envisions, Sampson said. Sampson had said he is open to meeting with any other community groups to better understand the community's needs for youth sports facilities and recreational opportunities. This includes a strong intention to continue to meet with diverse groups for an equitable approach to shaping out the beginning stages of the vision and how it can best meet the needs of all stakeholders, he said. So far, every group we have had a meeting with about the idea has been ecstatic about it. Tyler Neiser, longtime marketing manager for the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and a meeting past president of the Canby Area Chamber Board of Directors, will serve as the new economic development and tourism lead for the city of Canby, replacing Calvin Lesueur, who stepped down from the position last summer. Neiser is a Canby native and will bring years of experience in marketing, working with vendors, and coordinating large events to his new role with the city. He said in a press release that he is excited to serve Canby in this new capacity. This community is where I was raised and where I am raising my own family, he said. I look forward to working with the businesses and organizations who work tirelessly to make Canby a wonderful place and using new resources to continue its growth. Neiser worked for the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center for 4 years. His previous experience includes stints with Hope Village and the Canby Herald. He served as president of the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce in 2021. I am thrilled to have Tyler join the city's Economic Development Department, said Canby Economic Development Director Jamie Stickle. I have worked with him in many capacities over the last 6 years. I believe his energy and efforts are the right blend to take the city's economic development and tourism efforts into the future. Neiser's first day with the city will be Monday, February 14th. The Economic Development and Tourism Coordinator is tasked with coordinating events and promotions, small business outreach and development, and marketing Canby to residents and visitors. A longtime Canby area elected official will no longer represent the community's voters in the Oregon legislature after this year's midterm elections, even if he wins re-election in a district he claims was gerrymandered to be much more favorable to Democrats in the latest redistricting process. I think it is fair to say that Senate District 20, my district, starting with the upcoming elections, is one of the most gerrymandered seats of this year's reapportionment, Republican Senator Bill Kennemer told Now Hear This, Canby, in an email. Reapportionment, or redistricting, is a process by which the boundaries for congressional and legislative districts are redrawn every 10 years following the United States Census to reflect population shifts. In Oregon, as in most states, redistricting is led by the legislature, meaning the Beaver State's process was controlled by Democrats. Republicans cried foul early on, claiming the proposals favored by Democrats were illegally gerrymandered in their favor, but the map survived legal challenges and were upheld in the courts. Currently, the communities of Canby, Oregon City, Gladstone, Clackamas, and Charbonneau, along with a generous portion of rural Clackamas County, comprise Senate District 20, which Kennemer has represented since February 2021, when he was appointed to fill the unexpired term of former Senator Alan Olson. In the new, drastically reshaped District 20, virtually all of the rural areas are gone, replaced with Jennings Lodge, Oak Grove, urban unincorporated segments of Milwaukee toward the north as far as Johnson's Creek Boulevard, and a portion of Happy Valley. The change transforms 20 from a competitive district, albeit one in which Olson, a Republican, won by more than 5 points in 2014 and 2018, to one in which Kennemer said he expects to be at a 10-point disadvantage, at least, to his Democratic opponent. The net result is that Senate District 20 went from approximately an even distribution of Democrats and Republicans to, under reapportionment, a Democrat registration advantage, Kennemer said. Frankly, that's gerrymandering. Kennemer will continue to represent Canby and the other communities in the current District 20 until January 2023, though the primary and general elections this year will utilize the new maps. I so regret losing the Canby area for my Senate district, he said. I have appreciated the friendly, warm folks who live here and proud to have represented them. Kennemer also represented Canby, Mulino, Beaver Creek, Estacada, and a large portion of central Clackamas County for a decade as the elected representative of House District 39, a seat currently held by Christine Drazen. He had previously spent 10 years representing Oregon's 12th Senate District, which comprised parts of Milwaukee, Oregon City, Gladstone, Oak Grove, and East Clackamas County, but did not include Canby. House District 39 was also dramatically altered by the redistricting process, though it will not affect Drazen, who is resigning her seat at the end of this month to focus on the governor's race. Since the creation of the Georgia Smoke Diver Program in 1978, there have been 59 classes and over 1,100 students completing the course. The idea behind the training is to raise up thinking firefighters, according to Tyler. Josh Tyler, a lieutenant with Clackamas Fire, has become a certified Georgia Smoke Diver, a distinction no other Oregon firefighter claims. Since the creation of the Georgia Smoke Diver Program in 1978, there have been 59 classes and over 1,100 students completing the course. The idea behind the training is to raise up thinking firefighters, according to Tyler. The grueling training pushes participants to their limits, both physically and mentally, to become better firefighters. On average, fewer than half passed the training, and Tyler did just that. The Georgia Smoke Diver course is a 6-day, 60-hour program that includes between 10 to 12-hour drills each day designed for the experienced firefighter. The program covers realistic training in self-survival, including full water submersion in firefighting gear, firefighter rescue, advanced search and rescue, thermal imaging, emergency procedures, teamwork, discipline, situational awareness, and decision making. The training functions within the elements of the incident command system, all of which takes place after a 3-hour rigorous morning routine that includes high repetition calisthenics and full firefighting gear, a 5-mile run, and a 16-station obstacle course, which is designed to test the candidates' common firefighting skills such as search, forcible entry, and flashover scenarios. It's widely considered one of the most intense training courses a firefighter can experience, building competence and confidence in those who are able to complete it. In addition to the physical and mental preparation required for the week of training, Tyler had to make some other sacrifices as well. You're away from your family, not only during the program, but for the hours of preparation weekly leading up to the time you're away, he said. Each participant is also responsible for the financial requirements, which include, but are not limited to, travel and fees that come with the program. Words can't express the pride I feel for Lieutenant Josh Tyler in completing the Georgia Smoke Diver Program, said Clackamas Fire Chief Nick Brown. The mental toughness, fortitude, dedication, and service that Lieutenant Tyler demonstrates on a daily basis exemplifies what this program stands for. Servant leadership is about putting the needs of others first. It's about being at war with mediocrity because in doing so, you are better prepared to serve others and make those around you successful. It also represents the culture that exists at all levels here at Clackamas Fire. Cougar Country hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. The Canby Cougar swim team continued its red hot start this past week, though only the ladies got a chance to shine this time. Against the all-girls St. Mary's Blues, the ladies had the spotlight and the pool all to themselves in their Three Rivers League dual meet win. Allison Yancey, Amanda Yancey, Avery Kanonen, and Callie Moule began the competition by placing first in the 200-yard medley relay, while Faith Mason, Amy Smith, Michaela Knowles, and Ashley Peterson placed third in the event. Along with Moule and 200 individual winner Kanonen, the Yancey sisters were the other event winners. Amanda Yancey took both the 100 backstroke and 50 free, while Allison Yancey won both the 100 free and 100 breaststroke. Rounding out the individual competitors, Michaela Knowles finished in third in the 100 backstroke, Amy Smith was fourth in the 200 IM and the 100 back, and Karina Sawatsky finished fourth in the 100 fly. As the meet shifted back to relays, the 200 free relay saw the girls finish second and third. The team of Sawatsky, Parsons, Catherine Taggart, and Peterson placed second, while Knowles, Mason Smith, and Elizabeth Johnson took third. In the final relay of the day, the team of Allison Yancey, Amanda Yancey, Kinonen, and Moule finished first, securing the win for Canby. The Cougar girls won the event 94-76. In wrestling action, it was another bittersweet victory for the Cougs as they downed league rival Lake Ridge in dominant fashion, winning 4 out of 5 matches but taking 9 victories due to forfeit. After Lake Oswego could dress only 6 wrestlers due to COVID protocols the week before, Canby faced just 5 last week, meaning that most of the Canby boys have not seen real competition since the McMinnville tournament on January 8th, which itself was the first action the team had seen in nearly a month. Of the 5 Cougars that competed, 4 left victorious. Benjamin Young, Zach Netter, and James Kinonen all won by fall. Meanwhile, Craig Williams defeated Lake Ridge's Ian Healy by a 10-5 decision in the only match of the day that did not end with a pin. Josiel Kornacek was the lone pacer to claim victory on Wednesday, pinning Canby's Austin Matthews 5-43 into their matchup. His win would be the Pacers' only points of the night. Once again, the Cougar depth proved to be too much for a league foe. The Cougars will have one dual meet and one tournament this week, facing another Three Rivers League opponent in Oregon City on Thursday. Then, on Saturday, the Cougars travel to Wilsonville to take part of the Colton Holly Memorial Invitational, one of the marquee tourneys of the year. The Invitational will feature Newberg, Barlow, Tigard, and promises to be one of the tougher matches of the year for Coach Jeremy Ensrud and his squad.
Now Hear This, Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.
And now, a message from Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. So it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing, and I've heard it's amazing, and I think there's quite a following. Also, they'll have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4 to 8 in the afternoon.
And welcome back to the ad sponsor section, where I get to talk to people about books, because I always drag Megan Waterman in here to be with me. Hi, Megan.
Hi. That's not a bad thing. Talking about books is always the best time.
I think you know of all people that I can talk about books endlessly.
I do.
Yeah. So, Megan, do you want to tell our listeners about what's going on down at the Book Nook?
Oh, at the Book Nook, we are getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah.
I know.
There's only one I care about. And by the time this ad comes out, it's basically over.
Are you talking about Halloween?
Yeah, I like spooky, scary stories.
I know you do. We've got a lot of great spooky, scary stories in right now.
Yeah, yeah.
We do, but spooky, scary stories are also good for Christmas. Do you have a favorite author that writes spooky, scary stories that are appropriate for Christmas?
You go with your classic Charles Dickens, right?
Yep.
Some Christmas Carol stuff.
Absolutely, that's my favorite.
That's the best. There's M.R. James. I know about him. He did a whole series of short scary stories for Christmas.
Short scary stories? I don't know. Christmas in general is kind of scary. It depends on how many people you have to buy for.
How many people you have to cook dinner for?
Right.
Speaking of cooking dinner, Thanksgiving is coming up.
Thanksgiving is coming. We have got some beautiful cookbooks in recently, and some really cute kids cookbooks just came in if you want to start cooking with your grandkids or starting to teach, train up your little ones to cook Thanksgiving dinner so you can just sit on the couch and watch football.
And right now is the time to go in, right?
Yes.
Because waiting till Christmas Eve for that one special book that someone wants isn't going to work
out. It's not going to be there. This year, it's no secret, the last year and a half has been a little crazy for the whole world. And yeah, that is really going to affect Christmas this year. There are going to be serious stock issues this year. So get your Christmas shopping done early. We've been working really hard to get as much inventory on our shelves and in our overstock as possible so that we have what you want at Christmas time. But if you know now a title that you want to buy for somebody for Christmas, get it now.
All right.
I might not be able to get it later.
And what is all three of ours? Because we also have Amy in the studio with us. What's all three of ours? This season's book recommendation.
Okay.
Amy, what's your book recommendation for this season?
The Night Before Christmas.
All right. Yeah, that's classic. Megan?
And for me, my favorite Christmas read. Okay, my favorite book that's coming out it's no secret, I am an Outlander fan. I love Diana Gabaldon. There may be a cardboard cutout of Jamie Fraser in our bookstore. Book boyfriends are a thing.
Yeah.
And finally, book 9 is coming out towards the end of November. So you will not see me until I finish reading that.
And mine is the Dungeons & Dragons Feast of Legends or whatever, the table. So make sure you guys come on down to Book Nook. Megan, where are you guys located?
We are on the corner of Grant and 2nd in downtown Canby.
All right.
All right, well, joining us on the Canby conversation today for the last time.
The last time.
In this role is Kyle Lang, the still at this point, but by the time folks are listening to this, not anymore, director of the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Kyle. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Frankie.
So how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's, you know, change is always a challenge.
Of course.
But feeling up to it.
You've been with the chamber for coming up on 4 years.
Yeah. April would have been 4 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about just kind of your career journey? What brought you to the chamber?
Yeah. I mean, when the position opened up, basically I had family members and community members tell me about the position before it was even actually posted publicly.
Okay, so you were a ringer that they were...
I guess.
But that is how these things tend to go. People think, oh, you know, so-and-so would be good for that, and because it's one of those positions people are invested in, really want to see be successful.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically submitted my resume and my cover letter before the job was even posted, and then the job was posted, and I said, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
And I want to do this. So that's kind of...
That must have been a hardcover letter to write. I imagine you're looking for...
Right. Yeah.
If so, that's exactly what I am.
Exactly. I have all these skills, and I'm assuming that this is what you need. So, it was a shot in the dark, but it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. First couple of years... very different than, would you say?
I would say the first couple of years were very different than
What was kind of coming in, your sort of marching orders and what you were looking to do?
Well, I didn't have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
I didn't have any experience in chamber life, either as a member, as a participant at all. So really coming in, I had to educate myself kind of on what the chamber's purpose was.
Yeah.
And, you know, people always instantly think networking, that's what a chamber does. And it's, you know, coffee and handshakes and that kind of thing. And it is, it's about building relationships, and it's building and strengthening relationships within a community. But it soon became kind of very apparent to me that there was a lot of other things that we could be doing in order to support the community. And so we revamped the publication schedule, and made two new publications, more directly marketing the community to specific audience. We did the relocation guide for people outside the community looking in, and then we did the insider's guide, which was specifically for people who are already here, and educating them on what's going on around town, who's in business around town.
Staying here, spending money here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So revamped the publication schedule, really got actively involved in legislative advocacy, and really trying to represent business interests to government.
Yeah.
And getting involved in that space and kind of ramping that program up a little bit more than previous efforts.
Yeah.
And so those were probably the two kind of main things that I saw as low-hanging fruit and things that we needed to kind of move.
It was really a home run. I mean, you did awesome. You brought more people into the chamber, kind of raised its profile, made it really essential to the community just in time for the COVID pandemic, where it ended up being so essential among other of our institutions that helped. How did you know how to do all that? Like you said, you had not come from a chamber background. You weren't even a member.
Yeah. It. Well, specifically, as we moved into COVID, it was literally just response.
Instinct.
Just responding reactive.
Do you feel like you're good in a crisis?
I'll leave that for others to judge. I think we did what we could. We really positioned ourselves as an informational resource.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that we could do. Business owners don't have time to go to government meetings and, you know, Zoom calls all day and FEMA and SBA meetings, Small Business Association meetings and those types of things. So I really took it on myself to be present at those meetings and try and glean as much information and timely information as possible, and then blast that out to members in a way that was digestible. A lot of these programs and offerings that kind of arose out of the COVID situation were complex or had moving parts, and things would change over time. And so trying to kind of distill that information down to bite-sized chunks that business owners could ingest and make actionable was kind of the mission there.
Yeah, and really framing what I feel like I saw in a lot of your communications, especially in those earlier months, was really kind of framing the situations and the giving context in ways that was very helpful. You know, you alluded to that a little bit, but kind of expressing the limitations of what either the chamber or a prospective business owner, you know, could do, but still laying out, well, here are some options. You know, I think that that's really good, because it gives actionable information as opposed to just an information dump. It really kind of frames it in a helpful way.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was really the intent.
Your skill as a communicator, Kyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a writer.
Yeah.
So.
Educational background as well.
Educational background as well. Teacher.
Yeah.
Right. Trying to break things down into digestible pieces so you can, you know, step one, step two, step three.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like a lot of my experience, kind of previous experience, came to bear in this position in interesting ways that I wouldn't have expected on, you know, day one.
Yeah. I find myself reflecting on the pandemic, and especially kind of that first year and you know, moments that stand out or that kind of you know, come back to mind of that time. Are there anything like that for you that you can share, moments where you're just like, oh man, you know, the challenge felt very challenging at the time, or that you felt very sort of activated and rewarded as, you know, the work that you're putting in, that you were able to help someone or?
Yeah, developing the business recovery centers with the chambers of Clackamas County and kind of launching that initiative thanks to funding from Clackamas County. Really proud of that.
Yeah.
And really proud of that effort. and the effort of the other chamber directors around the county, we were able to really disseminate a lot of information about funding sources and grants and financial mechanisms that I think kept a lot of businesses afloat and eased some of the anxiety for those businesses. And that really is one of the, probably the things I'm most proud of is being in service in that way. Not just kind of giving lip service to the chamber being a resource that helps your business, but actually bringing something that was a tangible support in a time of crisis. And the board of directors, you know, they really deserve a lot of credit in terms of kind of giving me the leeway and really trusting in me to do a lot of what we did. They had the vision and the forethought to accept some of the things that I was proposing and seeing the benefit of it. And they've been a fantastic board to work for.
You know, when you do look at the pandemic, and again, going back to that kind of first year, but when things were particularly brutal for business owners, for especially independent and locally owned businesses, for folks listening that may just be kind of in the bubble of Canby and maybe think it wasn't as bad as people thought, Canby fared much better than a lot of other, even our kind of surrounding communities in terms of business. You know, we lost very few businesses. Really, I don't think any that maybe weren't already kind of struggling a little bit, even outside of COVID and maybe attending that way, or maybe folks were just retiring, or it was sort of just unrelated.
Geographical moves.
Some of the businesses
we lost were some to moves to other states or other areas of Oregon.
We had a couple retirements where it's like, I was going to retire in a few years, might as well. You know?
The moment is now.
But that plus, when you now look at year two, kind of the recovery and new businesses coming in, that has happened in Canby a lot quicker than a lot of other communities. And I think that it's not entirely attributed to your efforts in the chamber, but you were a part of that. And would you say kind of that you feel like the pickup has been quicker here in Canby? And what are some of the factors that you think have been affecting that?
Well, I do think that there has been some policy decisions from the city that were already well in motion. The development of the Canby Civic Block and the Dahlia Building and some of that downtown revitalization. I mean, those types of endeavors are measured in the scope of years, not in a moment. So there was some good kind of infrastructure elements kind of already in place and ready to activate. So the timing of that was great. I do think that the communal effort of a lot of our businesses to work together, to partner, to lift each other up, to do cross promotions and events. They were always kind of willing, but COVID really kind of kicked that into high gear. And I really see the Canby business community having kind of galvanized in a way that I wouldn't have said in maybe year one of my time at the chamber. Some interesting cross communications across businesses, partnerships, and things that have kind of arisen out of this moment of challenge. Which was really exciting to see. And I think largely it's their efforts and their welcoming and their willing to partnership that has kind of built up some of the momentum and some of the enthusiasm for like the downtown area and the development, businesses reaching out to other new businesses, welcoming them in or inviting them to land within the downtown. The city's economic development department does a great job along those lines as well. So, I mean, it really was a team community effort. I do think Canby is a relatively affluent community in comparison to some of the other communities in and around the region. And because we're a bedroom community and people were forced to kind of work from home, it actually landed people in in their homes, and so they spent their dollars locally.
Right.
Instead of being off in Portland at their office and buying lunch at a restaurant in Portland, they were here.
Yeah.
And they had the expendable income to purchase lunches and to support restaurants and hospitality and retail spaces.
Right.
And so I think that was a distinct advantage that Canby had that bore fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels very, or it has to feel very vindicating of a lot of these things that have been kind of hammered for so long to the point almost being cliche, you know, shopping local, the importance of that, the importance of having, you know, a strong chamber, strong, you know, proactive city policies and whatnot to where the, in a time of not crisis, the need for it might seem a little more hypothetical, but, you know, during a crisis like we saw, I mean, I think of like the Canby Farmers Market. Like that was a struggle for a long time before, you know, Alexis Purcell came along and just smashed it a couple of years ago. But can you imagine that first summer of COVID without the Canby Farmers Market? Nobody would have been in downtown Canby like for months, you know? I mean, it really was a through line of just keeping people even in that core area.
Right.
And keeping those kind of habits alive of, oh yeah, we go to downtown Canby to buy stuff.
Yeah, and I mean it.
To get supplies and stuff.
And the efforts, you know, we were really ramping up First Thursday and getting that going and trying to draw people into the downtown, and then COVID hit and that got shut down. And now it's kind of back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
And the folks made up of local business owners, the city's economic development department, Jamie Stickle, really trying to kind of reinvigorate that event and bring it into the downtown and really give people a cause to come and visit on, you know, the first Thursday of the month. The events that have been able to persist.
Yeah.
We now kind of understand the relationship between kind of brick and mortar business and regular business and its relationship to events. Mm-hmm. We can see the advantage of what those programs. They're not just little parties, right, that happen in our downtown. They are economic drivers that bring visitors and guests and tourists into the community and raise our visibility around the region. And I think Canby did a good job at pivoting where they needed to in order to keep some of those things alive and just persisting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So can you talk a little bit about the kind of chamber going forward? I know that they're doing interviews this week, I believe, for
we had our first round of interviews last week.
Uh-huh.
And there's talent there.
Awesome.
There's a couple of folks that I'm really excited about. And it really feels like both of there's two, I think, that kind of rose to the top in my opinion. And both of the ones I have my eye on, they really have skill sets different from each other, but also different from me.
Nice.
And so I really see, you know, whichever way the board goes in terms of making their inevitable decision, I could see either one really kind of growing and expanding and doing different things with the chamber, which would be exciting.
Very cool. What are they thinking as far as when they might make an announcement?
I don't know.
Yeah.
On the process. I know they want to have additional conversations with folks. And so it's just a matter of getting that on the schedule and facilitating those conversations.
Because your last day is Tuesday of this week, correct?
Mm-hmm, tomorrow, the 25th.
When we're recording this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, and tomorrow is the annual board retreat.
Okay.
So the board of directors will all be joining me, and we'll really be reviewing kind of the status of where we are, where we're going, what their goals are moving forward, having that conversation. We developed a 2-year strategic plan within the last year. And so that'll drive a lot of kind of what's next for the chamber. But, you know, we've been able to do well economically in the last couple of years. And so I think they're really kind of in a good place. Now it's just about establishing their priorities and putting the budget dollars to those priorities and executing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Well, I don't want to put you too on the spot as far as where you're going to next, but I do just want to kind of discuss a little bit and share, because I think and people see, you know, changes in different areas and whatnot, and I think that folks that maybe don't know you as well or don't know your situation, it wouldn't seem weird to like, oh, the COVID was really hard, you know, he's burnt out or whatnot, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what this resignation is behind. But I feel like, you know, this dream job kind of opened up and it's just perfect for you.
I mean, basically I was pursued.
Yeah.
An opportunity kind of landed in my lap.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a weird amalgamation of my skills and passions. And yeah, so I mean, yeah, the last couple of years have been hard.
Yeah. And friends, folks that you've known for a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know the folks. They're a known quantity to me. I'm a known quantity to them.
Yeah.
It truly is a partnership. So it's going to be exciting.
Yeah. But you were going to say it was tiring. It was kind of.
It was. Yeah. I mean.
You gave it all you had and it's kind of.
I left it on the field.
Yeah.
You know, I did. This job, I think, is well served by new ideas. Hmm. And that's really what I see this transition is that I came in, I did have some new ideas. I moved the ball down the field. Mm-hmm. And now it's time for somebody else to kind of take a look at what the needs of the community are.
Yeah.
And execute what they see as their vision.
Yeah.
And I think the community will be well served by that.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Those metaphors. I think somebody was watching a lot of playoff football yesterday.
So. I don't really sport, so I don't know why I use so many sporting metaphors, but yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, is there anything else, Kyle, that you'd like to share with folks, the community or other folks that you've worked with in your role as a chamber director?
Yeah, I mean, it really has been an honor to sit in this seat and to serve in this capacity.
Here, now here the studios.
Right. Right.
That seat.
This seat right here. And now here the studios.
Such an honor.
Which formed
yeah.
since my time at the chamber.
It was interesting when you were talking earlier, and I don't want to interrupt your thought, but because I think we came in, you were about 13 or 14 months in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time we met, you still saying that you were the new chamber director, that you felt very new. And I was like, well, that's, you know, over a year at this point. It's not that
right.
new. But part of that is you were getting your feet wet just in chamber world. You didn't come from that world. So,
right.
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember you guys landing in town and really being kind of excited about the work you guys were going to do. And that really is, that was one of the best parts of my job, was really kind of working with and landing new businesses within
yeah.
the community, trying to generate excitement, trying to generate support, provide resources.
Yeah.
That really was a fantastic part of the job.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do. Even during COVID, we had so many new businesses and yeah, I loved that part.
Yeah.
Brainstorming with people and seeing an idea kind of come from, you know, the germ to execution. I mean, Artomatic's a great example of that.
Yeah.
Like they showed up one day and they're like, we have this germ of an idea. And then it's like 4 months later.
Yeah.
They've literally landed in a brick and mortar space and they were going and they were one of my most impressive, I think, engagements, or they were impressive to me in terms of my engagements.
Yeah.
And just feeling like you're contributing to your community, you know, the community that I was born and raised in and went through school in, and just feeling like there'll be some things that are here and exist in this community that kind of have at least a little bit of my fingerprint on.
Yeah.
That'll be kind of lasting. I mean, it's fun to build things.
Yeah.
And to execute ideas and to contribute.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
You know, you've talked about this a little bit, but we've talked a lot about kind of the nuts and bolts and what people typically associate with chamber work, working with businesses, advocating on behalf of businesses. But one thing that I think that you did particularly well, and not that it was had never been done before, but that I think was much more made much more formalized and integral, was building the relationships and the active, I think, even at some points, kind of weekly meetings with city government, with county fairgrounds, with other kind of important organizations that kind of form that framework and that ecosystem for businesses to thrive and for events to be successful.
Yeah.
I think that, that was something that happened during your tenure and that you were always really good about.
Yeah. It takes a lot of players to make a community run and to make a community grow and to make a community thrive. And there's a lot of really good people doing really good work. And it's not necessarily even just about us having to have a hand in it, but having the information, knowing who is doing what, knowing what the landscape of and the projects and the limitations of kind of each of the players are in town. You know, it's a lot to keep track of, but there was some great thing. I mean, the wildfires and working with Canby Fire and with the fairgrounds and providing resources and displaced animals and, you know, all of these things. Right, we had fire, we had ice, we had plague, you know, like
heat wave. When you talk about Artomatic, their first weekend was that heat wave.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, so there's been a lot of challenges, but I feel like we've done a really good job as a community navigating those things. Mm-hmm. And you know, throughout this process, there's been a lot of moments where my community made me proud. Mm-hmm. And that makes going to work pretty easy.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of affection for what you're doing.
Nice. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. You'll still be around. Folks might still see you.
More coming soon.
Certain events as well.
Right.
Kyle, thank you so much for coming on today. Thanks so much for all of your work, particularly during the pandemic. Thanks for always being available to us for information as well.
Yeah.
And but both in terms of actually doing our own business. I believe I often tell the story, you taught me how to write a check.
I didn't know
how to do that.
That's right. I forgot about that.
For our first chamber dues when we
you're like, what is this thing?
Did I sign it? Where did I sign it?
Right.
So, but thank you for that. But no, thank you for being available to, you know, the listeners as well and to us as a news resource during those times, kind of helping us understand what was going on and kind of being that go-between with businesses. So
and there was times I felt a little bit like a scolding parent, but, you know, I tried to package that nicely.
Yeah. It's a skill.
Right.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out which TV option I want to use when DirectLink turns off their video services in January of next year. It's so confusing. Do you know there's about 48 million streaming services to choose from? Which devices do they work on? What channels do they offer?
No, I did not know that. But you do realize that you're probably better off than you think. If you have DirectLink's Easy Video TV now, you're already using a streaming service. But listen, you don't have to go this alone. DirectLink is actually helping their members transition to their next video provider. The company has an extensive informational website where you can compare popular services, and they host live tutorials on streaming TV options to help you decide.
Well, hold the phone. Are you saying that they're actively trying to help their members switch to a competing service? Who does that?
Well, DirectLink does. I mean, I guess it's one more chapter in their long history of wanting the best for our community. They've actually offered free classes for the past 12 years that teach our neighbors about the latest technology and internet security practices. And don't forget, they also orchestrated that popular bingo game last year that helped keep everyone entertained and connected during the lockdowns. They've also launched special programs to help keep our students connected at home during the pandemic, and partnered with the City of Canby to give free Wi-Fi year-round at three local parks for locals and visitors alike.
Wait, DirectLink does all that?
They do indeed, and that's on top of providing the best and most reliable internet and voice services in town. So, to learn more about DirectLink services or how they can help you transition to the right video service for your home, visit directlink.coop today.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's C-U-R-R-E-N-T, to 888-906-3432.
Can Be Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop, open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby, or connect with them on Facebook or through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. Barlow was appointed Justice of the Peace for Clackamas County, which was much larger in those days, by acting Governor Kinzing Pritchett in 1850, the same year that he bought a donation land claim from Canadian explorer and fur trader Thomas McKay, who later led a militia company that saw action in the Cayuse War. The land was eventually sold to Samuel's son William, portions of which would eventually form the town of Barlow and the historic William Barlow House. Initially the largest and most prosperous of the ABC sister cities, a train station was established in Barlow when the O&C Railroad was built in 1870. It remained the main stop in the area until the explosion of fertile farmlands in Canby fueled an economic and population boom, necessitating an expanded station to accommodate the crops and cattle being exported down to the Southern Pacific Railroad route. Barlow's post office was established in February 1871 and would serve the area more than 100 years, closing its doors on January 3, 1975. The town was incorporated in 1903 as Barlow, named not after the famous Samuel Barlow, but his son, William, who lived there and started a sawmill, a gristmill, the post office, and the Barlow Bank and Land Development Company. The late 1800s was Barlow's heyday, as the city was home to more than 40 families and boasted a school, a bank, two churches, two hotels, two general stores, three saloons, a feed store and livery stable, and a newspaper. Downtown Barlow had wooden sidewalks and white picket fences. But while Canby thrived, thanks to a higher and drier location that was less likely to flood, Barlow stagnated and declined. By the early 20th century, Barlow was little more than a ghost town. It did not start attracting many new residents until after World War II. William Barlow and his wife, Martha Ann, bought more land and established a large plantation on the rich, moist bottom land that stretches between the Molalla and Pudding Rivers. The couple built a southern-style mansion, which burned down in 1883. 2 years later, he built a grand new home in the Victorian Italiente style, which was popular in the mid to late 19th century. The house passed to Williams's daughter, Mary, in 1896, and it was sold out of the family in 1906. William died at 81 years old in 1904. The Barlow Fountain, built to honor the contributions of William Barlow and his family, was dedicated to Mary Barlow in 1904. still standing to this day, having been beautifully restored by the late Virginia L. Miller, who lived there and operated it as a private museum until her passing in 2004, the William Barlow House is the oldest residential structure in the Canby area. The Barlow House was listed on the National Registry of Historic Places on February 15, 1977, and remains a prominent landmark of Canby to this day. We have one last story to tell you about this remarkable family and property, and it concerns the iconic twin rows of black walnut trees that frame the historic house. It is also a story about how one person's will can shape the face of the future, or at least the face of the landscape. The walnut trees are Martha Ann Barlow's contribution to history, and they have roots that burrow throughout the Willamette Valley. A Southern Belle from Virginia, Martha Ann traveled the Oregon Trail west in 1850 and married widower William Barlow 2 years later. Barlow had just bought his father's 640-acre donation land claim, where he built for his bride a Southern-style plantation mansion that later burned down. But even with her 18-room Southern mansion, Martha Ann was still homesick. She pined for the wide, tree-lined avenues of her childhood home and talked of them longingly. Finally, William resolved to plant Martha Ann an Oregon version, his only condition being that the trees be the black walnuts of his youth in Indiana, for he, too, was not immune to the pangs of childhood nostalgia. But first, William had to get some nuts to plant. He couldn't just mosey down to the corner feed store, much less boot up the desktop and order a Prime Day delivery on Amazon.com. Amazon was still at least 150 years from taking over the world, and black walnuts, native to the eastern United States, weren't found anywhere near Oregon. William finally tracked down a friend who was going east and agreed to bring him a sack of walnuts, a task that turned out to be more complicated than he would have ever imagined. When the friend's return to Oregon was delayed, he entrusted the walnuts to Samuel Royal Thurston, a native of Monmouth, Maine, who became the first delegate from the Oregon Territory to serve in the United States Congress. Sadly, Thurston never made it home to Oregon. He caught fever somewhere near Panama and died at sea. Burial at sea was common, and the sailors were all for it, but the captain decided Thurston was important enough to make an exception. They landed at San Francisco, where Thurston was buried. The sack of walnuts, still in his possession, seemed doomed. Then again, one would be unwise to ever underestimate the power of a woman's persuasion. Martha Ann wanted those walnuts. So William, on a business trip to San Francisco, managed to locate Sam Oakley, who had nursed Thurston during his illness. Oakley led William to the nuts, which had been stored with Thurston's other belongings. The freight and storage bill came up to $65, quite a pot of dough in those days. Here's where the story diverges a bit. Some versions say William was appalled by the price tag and flatly refused to pay. He came home empty-handed, only to return immediately upon seeing the reaction of Martha Ann's. Other retellings say he coughed up the dough on the first trip and that Martha was just as astounded at the cost as William had been. Whichever is true, the walnuts finally arrived in Oregon. And on this, everyone agrees, it was a day of celebration. William cut open the bag and rolled them out onto the floor at Martha Ann's feet, where they cracked a few to eat and counted the bounty, 665 black walnuts and 100 butternuts, a close relative in the walnut family. These they put in a box of sand and fertilizer, which William buried under the manure pile. That spring of 1854, 750 seedlings sprung up, their long roots tangled and bursting through the box. The new trees were planted in a bed to get started and were ready for transplanting that fall. Martha Ann finally got her tree-lined avenue, and what a grand sight it was, 50 trees stretching down each side of the carriage drive. But she wasn't the only one to benefit from those hard-won walnuts. The Barlows gave seedlings to friends and relatives and sold the extras at $1.50 apiece, ultimately realizing a profit nearly 10 times their initial investment. Now, almost 150 years later, those huge old walnuts dot the valley, most of them from that first bag of walnuts. Some are documented, including one on Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway and another on Savi Island. Unfortunately, the development of the railroad and highway led to the removal of most of Martha Ann's avenue of trees. One with a trunk almost 4 feet in diameter and a spread of 240 feet was just too beautiful to destroy. Ben Holliday, the roguish speculator who also happened to be president of the Oregon and California Railroad when it was being built through Canby and Barlow, couldn't bear to see it go. It took two flat rail cars to do it, but Holliday moved the gigantic tree more than 20 miles to his home in Holliday's Addition in his what's now inner Northeast Portland. Today, 14 trees lead to the Victorian Italianate house built in 1884 after the original Southern Mansion burned down. They tower high above Highway 99E, framing the grand home and a legacy that was born through the will of one woman.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.